Tonight's concert. Tonight's concert is really special because not only do we have two absolutely superb performers with Tony Rice on guitar and David Grisman on mandolin, but we will be hearing some of the tunes on their recent recording, Tone Poems, which features the instruments just as much as it does the artists. Each instrument has a personality and soul of its own, and what I will do tonight, aside from simply introducing Tony and Dave, who I really don't think much needs to be said about, we know they're some of the greatest, is I'll try to talk a bit about each instrument and give some insight as to what makes them special, what kind of sounds they have, and what really makes them what they are. The first tune that they're going to play, and first of all, I'd like to get Tony and Dave on stage. Say a few words about the instruments. The guitar is an 1891 Martin 121. At that time, Martin guitars were set up for gut strings, and this particular instrument right now is strung with silk steel. These are adaptable enough that they can be strung with very light steel strings, and silk steel strings have silk wrapping on a steel core and steel trebles. But it's a small body size by today's standards. Back when that guitar was made, however, it was considered a full-size guitar and was used for parlor music, which is more akin to today's classical. But what you'll find is it's a very versatile instrument. The mandolin is a 1905 Gibson A4, and this is an instrument that really predates Gibson's more modern designs, which came out around 1910 with a higher bridge and a greater angle of neck set. But this is an instrument that was designed originally for classical music, and dog music wasn't around then. But there were some great mandolin players back at that time, and this was a radical design for its day because other instrument builders at that time were producing mandolins with flat top and the bowl back, what today is commonly called the Taterbug mandolin, which is strictly classical. But these instruments have a carved top and a carved back and a much longer scale length and are much more powerful sounding than any of the ones that had preceded them. And I think we'll play.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to play. There are actually 17 mandolins and 17 guitars on the album, and we have a fraction of those here, so we're going to play two tunes on this pair of instruments. This is a little tune that I wrote for my four-and-a-half-year-old son, Samson, when he was a little baby, and I call it Sambino. I recorded this on a Lyon and Healy Style A, which George knows more about than I. Tony used a mortar guitar, I believe, on that, made by the Larson brothers. But these are similar instruments, so we're going to do this little ditty called Sambino.
Now got a 1923 model Gibson Style O guitar and a 1909 Gibson F4 mandolin. And these are quite different instruments. The Style O guitar is a model that was made from about 1910 till about 1924 and was a piece designed to complement the mandolin orchestras, so it has a construction very similar to the Gibson mandolins, with the large scroll, the oval sound holes, carved top, and carved back. And this is a guitar that, again, is really very unique. Other makers at the time were producing strictly flat top instruments designed for gut strings, where this guitar is designed for steel strings and is a real orchestral type instrument. Radically different in design from anything that preceded it. Shortly after this guitar was made, actually about the same time this guitar was made, after this model was first introduced, Gibson came out with F-hole archtop guitars, which even today are considered modern orchestral jazz guitars. This particular model effectively was a somewhat of a dead end in evolution in that it wasn't made after 24, but it still sets some of the precedents that came later in archtop guitar design. The mandolin really is the next evolutionary step beyond the one that David played before. Even in the 1890s, Gibson, Orville Gibson, was doing scroll models like this with the oval sound holes. But this instrument has a higher bridge, a sharper angle of neck set, somewhat smaller body than preceded. It's shallower and a different carving pattern. This is one of the first Gibson mandolins that really is fairly modern in dimensions, although shortly after this was made, by 1910, they eliminated this extra point on the body and had a two-point body shape, slightly different in shape, but only subtly different. This is still a very fine classical mandolin and quite versatile. I think that what you'll hear is that often enough, the musician is going to be far more important in the tone that you're going to hear over the microphone than which instrument they're playing. In a group with no mics, and you have to cut through a whole 30-piece mandolin orchestra, one may have more power than another, but in front of the microphones like this, what you're really going to hear is the touch of these musicians is what truly makes or breaks the sound.
This is called the Prisoner's Waltz. Thank you. To do a little tune that you don't usually hear in bluegrass bands, but we recorded this with some instruments made in the 50s, but we didn't bring them with us, so this is actually an older song than the 50s. I was really playing Elvis's version, but this goes way back before then, so since these instruments are so pretty, we'll do O Solo Mio. I'm glad George came down here tonight. We were wondering who we were going to get to do this.
The next two instruments were both made in the year 1937. The guitar is a Martin Singolo 18, which, while a small instrument by today's standards, was certainly considered a full-size guitar back then. This is an instrument really made during what would be considered Martin's golden era of steel-string flat-top guitars. It's a thoroughly modern guitar so far as the evolution of the instrument. Really, by the end of 1934, Martin had pretty well perfected their steel-string flat-top designed such that from the period of 34 through early 39, some of those are considered the absolute best instruments that the company ever produced. The mandolin is an Epiphone made by one of Gibson's major competitors. In fact, when Gibson had a slogan, "Only a Gibson is good enough," Epiphone came out with a slogan, "When good enough is not enough," and then Gibson dropped there. But this instrument features the carved top, carved back, like the Gibson. And like the Gibson designs from 1922 onward, it features F sound holes and parallel top braces, which give a very powerful sound. This instrument differs from a Gibson in having walnut rather than maple back and sides. The body dimensions are somewhat deeper. The carving pattern, the arching is a bit higher. But still, it has a sound that's very much like some of the Gibsons. Epiphone was a major competitor in guitars, banjos, and mandolins. and if anything, was a real thorn in Gibson's sides till when finally Epiphone came up with financial trouble in the mid-50s, Gibson was able to buy them. And today, Epiphone is a brand name distributed by Gibson.
And I bought this Epiphone from George Gruen. We're going to do an old murder ballad called The Banks of the Ohio.
Next two instruments are remarkably different in that rather than being by famous makers expensive instruments, these were budget models when new. Both were made by Regal in Chicago during the 1930s, but they neither one say Regal on them. The mandolin says S.S. Stewart, Snow Queen. Regal, like some of the modern Japanese and Korean companies where one factory may make 50 different brand names, basically would make for whatever distributor wanted a product. If you had a music store or a distribution company and you told them what design you wanted and what name you wanted on the peg head, by golly, they did it. But they are good examples showing how fine music can be played on relatively inexpensive instruments if they're set up well. They're also innovative in that, for example, Gretsch later in the 50s came out with white finishes on models like the Penguin and the White Falcon, and everybody thought that was wonderfully innovative. Here it is many years earlier, and a mandolin that truly sounds quite good. The guitar, the Le Domino, was a cheap instrument, about $10 new, but it has domino pattern on the top around the sound hole. These things sound really good for blues. In fact, sometimes for a truly authentic blues sound, really sophisticated, expensive instruments just don't sound bluesy. And if these are set up right, they have a funky sound that's not funky bad, but can be really funky good. The next two instruments both date from 1936, and they're rather interesting pieces. The guitar is a Gibson-style L Century model, LC. Century actually stood for Century of Progress Exposition in Chicago of 1933, when the model was first introduced. It features a prominent amount of perloid plastic, or what I call mother of toilet seat, on the peg head and fingerboard, and the inlays are rosewood inlaid with pearl. It's very flashy and actually quite durable, and on stage I think it has a very fine appearance. The sunburst finish also really shows off the instrument, and it has rather attractive curly maple back and sides. It's a model that Gibson produced from 33 on into the late 1930s, and is quite typical in size of the smaller Gibson flat tops of that period. The Martin mandolin, the style 230, was Martin's top model mandolin, curly maple back and sides. It's carved. It's actually quite similar in construction in many ways to the Epiphone Strand, but Martin has a much higher angle of neck set and high bridge. The carving pattern is different, and the mandolin really comes out sounding somewhat more classical, whereas the Epiphone perhaps a bit more jazzy. But again, this was Martin's most expensive model mandolin. It was really quite an expensive instrument by any standards of that time. The LC flat top also, at that time, was one of Gibson's most expensive flat tops in that body size. They were considered to be high-quality, professional-grade instruments of their period.
Here's a tune that every guitar picker has got to learn. Another tune from the album on these instruments that's sort of, this is like a dog type tune called Morning Sun. These tunes were pretty much thrown together at the recording session where we were mainly trying to figure out which instruments to record, and then we figured out what to play on them. So I wrote this little piece pretty quick, and it's kind of I guess progressive for 1936 instruments, so we'll use these flashy 30s instruments. Morning Sun. Thank you.
Next two instruments are really some of the most significant models ever produced by any company, and maybe are worth a little bit more talk. The 1935 Martin D28 is a famous instrument in its own right, just as an instrument. This particular guitar was the main rhythm guitar that was used by Clarence White. It used to be with the Kentucky Colonels and later with the Byrds. And the model is certainly one of the most sought-after collectibles that the company has ever produced. The 14-fret D28 herringbones made from 1934 through early 39 with the Hi-X bracing are generally considered to be the absolute ultimate flat-top guitars ever made, those and the D45, which was essentially really the same animal with more pearl. But this particular guitar has had a sort of rough life, but a lot of music's been made on this thing, but Clarence certainly played a great deal on it. One day he did what a lot of musicians do. He was loading up his car, and he put the case for his D18 and his D28 right down and sort of forgot about it and backed over them. And it was put back together. It's been further modified in that Martin didn't make guitars with sound holes as big as that. And this sound hole sort of got wallowed out and picked a bit, and it was decided, well, gee, we can just take a pocket knife and we can round it out so it'll be nice and even. And what came out is that, well, from a vintage collector's or a dealer's point of view, that's pretty horrifying and makes me a little ill. The sound changed. And what Clarence and what Tony have found is that the sound with the larger sound hole suits them. It gives less feedback, it records well, and it has a tone that just seems to suit them extremely well. Tony lives in Florida, and more recently, there was the hurricane, and this guitar spent a couple of hours underwater, which didn't do it too much good either, but you'll note that it is back together, and this is Tony's main guitar, and it's something that has been very much affiliated with his career and with Clarence before. It's a historic model by a great maker, and it's been in the hands of some marvelous musicians. This guitar has so much history behind it that it would be hard to imagine one particular instrument that could be more significant in so many different ways. The mandolin is a Gibson F5 dated December 20th of 1922, signed by Gibson acoustic engineer Lloyd Lohr. And this instrument is the absolute pinnacle of evolution and perfection of mandolins. There simply is no model mandolin that's sought after more. Lloyd Lohr was a great musician, a great acoustic engineer, later went on to be a professor of acoustics at Northwestern University, but he designed some of the first electric instruments ever, some of the first solid body instruments ever. In fact, he left Gibson at the end of 1924, partially in dispute that he wanted them to go into making electric guitars, and they didn't want to. He was rather ahead of his time. He had written papers about how an acoustic sound chamber was not essential, in fact, detrimental to tone on electric instruments. But this mandolin combines features never before seen. It's the first model that any maker did with the F sound holes, with parallel tone bracing. The fingerboard is raised off the top, much like a violin, which gives more volume. It has an adjustable truss rod in the neck. It also has a longer neck than any mandolin that preceded it. Not longer scale here to here, but more frets clear of the body. You could reach more chords. This is the model mandolin, a 1923 model that Bill Monroe used. It really very much helped to create the bluegrass sound. If you listen to recordings of Bill prior to 1946, he's playing a different style of music. It's not just that the mandolin sounds different on a recording, but what it prompts the musician to do may not be something you hear over the mic, but what it the sounds, it's sort of like there are different tunes in this mandolin than in the others, and it prompts you to play, and it barks, it does things that the others don't do. But these are also some of the most expensive mandolins ever. I mean, basically, you have here about a $40,000 mandolin, and that's if Joe Blow owned it. It doesn't have to be any memorabilia appeal. That's just what an F5 of that era will bring. A herringbone D of that period, in good, clean, original condition, is, you know, it can be a $30,000, even $40,000 instrument. This instrument, if it was owned by Joe Blow in that condition, would be considered devalued. Considering the history that this piece has as a piece of memorabilia as well as a musical instrument, it's very difficult to put a price on it other than to say, it's expensive and it's good.
This is for Clarence White. This is a tune that I heard Clarence, that we both heard Clarence play quite often. I Am a Pilgrim. Thank you. Play a couple other tunes on these instruments because we're used to them.
Yeah.
This next tune is called Dog After Dark. We stayed up late one night and we had just recorded a version of Summertime. George Gershwin's Summertime, and then I came up with this little tune, and this is what ended up on the album, Dog After Dark.
The next two instruments are both recent issue, and essentially also each of these are closely modeled after the previous two. So the mandolin by Stephen Gilchrist of Warrnambool, Australia, is an example.
I have 40 grand.
Well, you still have to have some money. They're about $6,000, but it's a marvelously good instrument. Stephen Gilchrist, in my opinion, is as good a mandolin maker who is currently alive. And this is an instrument closely modeled after the original Gibson. It does show, though, that the original Gibson still has, in effect, the archetype. This doesn't have a lot in it that is new, that the Gibson hadn't already thought out. Although, in the case of Gilchrist, he at least knew what kind of music was likely to be played on it. The Gibson was designed for classical music. Bill Monroe wasn't playing bluegrass. Nobody was playing bluegrass or very much country on mandolin. The F5 was designed to be a classical mandolin, and it's a very rare instrument today, not simply because it was expensive when new, but because it was introduced in 1922, and unfortunately for Gibson, the mandolin boom died in about 21. It was like coming out with the ultimate buggy whip after the automobile had been invented. Nobody wanted one. It didn't matter how good the mandolin was. There was really not much demand for mandolins until the late 40s when bluegrass came around. The guitar is made by Santa Cruz Guitar Company of Santa Cruz, California, and it is a Tony Rice model. So obviously it is closely modeled after the original 1935 D28, including the modifications of having a cut-down slimmed neck and the large sound hull. The woods in both of these instruments are the same type wood as used in the original. Spruce top, maple back and sides on the mandolin, spruce top and very finely grained Brazilian rosewood back and sides on the guitar. Brazilian rosewood is very difficult to get now, thanks to the International CITES Treaty Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species. It's illegal to transport Brazilian rosewood across international borders, so if Tony goes to Japan with his guitar, he can get busted for it. But what you'll find also is that these are great instruments. It's not just that all good instruments are old. There are makers today building far better instruments than have been in the last 30 years. 30 years ago, a lot of the companies were making things that basically made people want vintage because the new ones weren't so good. Today, there are new makers producing instruments that really are very fine quality instruments. There are more guitar builders today than ever before in American history, and the quality of the art today is far superior to what was around 30 years ago. Not really better than the 20s, but rivaling it. There are makers today who are just good by any historic standards, and what you'll hear is these are just good instruments regardless of age.
This is the Watson Blues that Bill Monroe wrote for Doc Watson. Thank you so much. We're going to close off this little set here with a piece from 1942, played on 93 instruments, but what the heck. This is written by the great Django Reinhardt, Swing 42. Thank you.
Hey, this isn't over. We'd like to call out Jim Kerwin, Joe Craven, and Matt Eckel. We're going to have a new quintet here.